You know, things don't stay the same forever. Businesses change, buildings start to look a little different, but the value those places add to our lives, it stays the same. Larry Mueller here. Today on the show, we're going to talk about the importance of ordinary buildings in our lives. The Northwoods resorts and bars, the bowling alleys, the dance halls, the gas stations, whatever it might be, the churches. Jim Drager, our guest, he's worked in the field of historic preservation and architecture at the Wisconsin Historical Society for more than 20 years, most recently as the State Historic Preservation Officer. So it's great to have him with us today to talk about those places. And Jim Drager, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Larry. Great to be on.
I want to give the phone number. If you want to join in, what's a place, past or present, that's had an impact on your life? What's a building that holds memories? Give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Jim, you've written and given talks about a lot of ordinary seeming buildings over the years. As I said, those gas stations or the public libraries, the restaurants, the dance halls, the theaters. What is it about those places that's interested you over the years?
Well, Larry, you know, I think what made me passionate about architecture is that these ordinary places are all architectures created of a time and of a place. So at any given moment in time, the kinds of buildings that we build are really expressive of that moment in history. It's the culmination of social, economic, cultural forces, technology. They're basically expressions of what people value at any point in time. So even the ordinary buildings, they embody kind of the spirit of people at that moment in which those buildings were built. And I think, to me, that's the fascinating part. It's the interplay between what people value and how that value is expressed in the places that we build and we live and work in.
Yeah, I think you're right. I was doing some thinking about buildings that hold some special interest to me over the years. There was a place in McFarland, it was called Edwards Park, and it was a pavilion where, when I was a kid, everybody who got married in our community had a wedding dance at Edwards Park.
Sure.
and the parents, you know, the parents would take the kids, and there'd be a band, and they might play a polka or two, and everybody got to dance. And
yeah.
That's where I learned how to dance, as a matter of fact.
Sure.
So that's, what about?
I like to say that buildings are containers that hold the stories of our past, you know, and that's really true with you and your dance hall, because it's that building has memories that are important to you.
Yeah.
So when you preserve the building, you preserve the ability to be able to continue to convey those stories. And, you know, I think that's why I was so interested in historic preservation as a career.
Yeah. Do you have some favorite buildings of your own in the state?
Oh, absolutely, Larry. don't get me started. I could talk about a lot of them, you know. To me, what I think is so interesting about Wisconsin and what compelled me to come back here, you know, decades ago to have my professional life here in Wisconsin is that Wisconsin is, it's geographically diverse, it's culturally diverse, and all of that is expressed in ordinary buildings. You know, you drive through Wisconsin, and when you're in southwestern Wisconsin, you can see all those fieldstone buildings, you know, that the pioneers built. Up north, it's the great log architecture. In the west, it's all of that, the limestone constructed buildings, cream brick in Milwaukee and Racine and places like that. So it expresses the diversity of Wisconsin as a place.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. So many of these buildings have are coming to my mind. The Mabel Tainter Theater, you know that?
That is fantastic, right? Yeah, Menominee. Yeah, it's an extraordinary building, really extraordinary. And, well, you know, Larry, the most extraordinary thing about that building is it survived. It's still here today. You know, there were buildings of that caliber all around Wisconsin that were torn down and lost forever. But, you know, when we can keep one of those, that is something that enriches everyone's lives.
I remember going to that theater for a play.
And oh, yeah.
Looking at the seats, and I was told that the Tainter family named the place after I think he was a lumber baron or something, but he had the seats. He had the seats. Some were wider, some were thinner, and he'd made them for his friends. he had seating that were wider for his
wider friends.
His wider friends and so far and so forth. And so they kind of the history behind these buildings to me is so fascinating, too. And I remember seeing a great play there. I think it was a young guy. My girlfriend was in the play, so I had to go to
terrific. Terrific. Well, that building was restored partly with funding from the Jeffress Family Foundation out of Janesville, and it's spectacular today. If you haven't been to it since it was restored, Larry, it's just one of those places you walk in and you're just so in awe of the space.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, Nancy in Grafton has something for us. Let's go there. Hi, Nancy.
Good morning. The house I live in used to be the first St. Paul's Lutheran School. And it was on Highway 60 on the south side by St. Paul's property. And years later, it was winched across the farmlands a couple of blocks north. Well, years and years and years later, then this Catholic family with the 14 kids, that's me, we moved into that house. And I look at those wooden floors and I think, you know what? Those little feet that walked and went to school here in this building probably are all gone by now. But it's very nice to think about, you know what, here I'm only two blocks north of the old Lutheran school, being Catholic, but by gosh, we're all together. And it makes me happy.
Nancy, thank you. Jim, a comment?
I think the repurposing of old buildings is such a part of it's so important to our culture to take buildings that have gotten to the end of their original life and look at them creatively and do something with them. You know, all across Wisconsin, schools have been turned into apartment buildings, office buildings, things like that. And, you know, just from a sustainability standpoint, if you can save a building from going to the landfill, it's good for all of us. So I think it's wonderful that our family made that commitment to reinvest in that building and how it became a rich part of their life.
Yeah, Nancy, thanks again. Let's go to Steve in Wausau. Steve, hello.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. Remembering back to 1960, in the 60s, I did my junior English team on Frank Lloyd Wright's research center, Johnson Wax Research Center, designed by Frank Lloyd Wright in Racine, Wisconsin. And I think that's the only reason I got through English, because I had something to write about. And it was the lily pad columns that stood out in my mind, and you see that everywhere, that this man knew what he was doing when he built that building. Thank you for taking my...
Thank you, Steve, for calling. Comment there, Jim?
Well, you can't talk about Wisconsin architecture without talking about Frank Lloyd Wright. And obviously his influence was worldwide in architecture. And, you know, I think it's really fascinating that Wright came out of Wisconsin, because Wisconsin's always been architecturally, it's been a place of creation. A lot of things were innovated here, and people, a lot of the stories have been lost, you know. So you have that kind of master craft architecture of Frank Lloyd Wright, where his buildings are his individual artistic statements. And then you have kind of the workaday buildings on the other side of the spectrum. And Wisconsin has a rich history of that, too. You know, the early experiments in prefabrication of houses that came out of Wisconsin. A lot of people probably aren't aware of that. One of the largest prefabricators in the United States was here in Wisconsin, and built thousands of homes that were, you know, shipped to site and erected, that sort of thing. Innovations in materials and how materials are being used. Johnson Wax is a great example of that. Those mushroom columns, they really don't have a precedent. It's original thinking.
They're beautiful for sure. John in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, John.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Have a question for available sources. We are planning, a group of us are planning to take down a fire tower and have it rebuilt. And the guest would have any suggestions.
Well, is this up in Door County?
No, this is up in Ashland County. Ashland County.
Oh, okay. Great, great.
Yeah, we're a group called Friends of Copper Falls State Park.
Oh, sure. In my former job at the Historical Society, I dealt with the Friends a number of times, and you're doing great work up there with that park. It's really special. If people haven't been there, that park is really worth a visit. It's stunning,
fantastic,
stunningly beautiful.
So, and John's question is, how do we, John, are you trying to figure out sources of information for taking it down and putting it back up, or
the Mellon Fire Tower is totally disintegrating, and because of its historical significance for Ashland County and that in northern Wisconsin, it's a shame to see that. So we're looking to take it down. Those arrangements are making or being, the planning is done. It's getting the funding to help.
Yeah.
And just looking for some sources.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I can tell you that one of the places to start is with the State Historic Preservation Office at the Wisconsin Historical Society. They have expertise. They have lots of practical knowledge from having worked with other groups doing similar kinds of projects. I don't know if you're aware that there's one of those towers in Door County that is also undergoing the same kind of rejuvenation as your fire tower is. And you could learn from what they did and the experiences that they had. How did they raise their money? That sort of thing. But in terms of funding, I think my best suggestion there is that most money comes locally in any preservation project. It's the people who live there who have, emotional investment or ownership in those properties that are the people who are going to step forward and put their money where their mouth is and, you know, help to preserve the building.
Yeah. John, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it.
I might add one more thing. The Wisconsin Historical Society has a funding database on their website that you can search by type of project, the kind of what the organization is that owns the property, that sort of thing. And it'll give you, there are about maybe 60 different sources of funding in Wisconsin. So that's a great place to start.
Thanks again, John. Appreciate it. Jim Drager, our guest today, worked in the field of historic preservation and architecture at the Wisconsin Historical Society. Been involved for over, I said 20 years earlier, but actually it's been more than 30 years. He's had a lot of experience. And he's a co-author of Bottoms Up, A Toast to Wisconsin's Historic Bars and Breweries, and Filler Up, The Glory Days of Wisconsin Gas Stations. So we can talk about that as well with him. But questions or maybe experiences to share. What's a place, past or present, that's had an impact on your life? Maybe a favorite place to spend time in your town, a favorite building. Give a call at 800-642-1234. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Detter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at the value of ordinary buildings of the past and the present with our guest today, Jim Drager of the Wisconsin Historical Society. It's great to have him with us. Certainly, if you have questions, I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Change is inevitable. We might revisit our hometown after years away and things look different. How does our relationship to the buildings change over time?
That's a really good question. Well, you know, as culture changes, the way that we, how we use buildings and the way that they're used changes as well. You know, in this pandemic that we're in right now, I find myself thinking a lot about how architecture is going to evolve to address these kind of public health concerns that in a way that we haven't had to address them in the past. You know, that people are changing their habits, they're changing the way that they what they consume and how they consume it. And that certainly has a big effect on architecture. You know, with the pandemic, the closing of taverns, for example, in Wisconsin, is going to be a very significant development as we come out of the other end of this. And there are going to be a lot of vacant buildings sitting around looking for a new use.
Yeah. Yeah. Climate change will have an effect, too, on the architecture, I'm guessing.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, much more so in other parts of the country where sea level rises are becoming a really significant risk, you know, that sort of thing. But even in Wisconsin, it certainly is going to change the architecture.
Let's take another call. Jane in Menominee will give you a chance now. Hi, Jane.
Several years ago, Eau Claire, Wisconsin did a major update.
Sure.
Oh, Jane has broken up and we lost her. She lived in Eau Claire when they were doing that major reconstruction of downtown, and she worked in a senior center where they were upset about the changes. And I think she was wondering if they had an idea of how to help older people adjust to that sort of thing.
That's you know, that's a good question. A lot of the reason why people want to preserve historic buildings, it really comes out of nostalgia. You know, they connect with it because there is it embodies part of their personal life, just like your interest in McFarland and that shelter in the park, that comes out of a deep-rooted emotional connection that you feel to that. And that is one of the primary drivers of why people are interested in preservation.
Yeah. Jerry in Prairie du Chien will give you a chance. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to mention a couple of things. One, as far as buildings remembered, and it's still there in Superior, Wisconsin, in the Eloise neighborhood of Superior, is the Belgian Club, B-E-L-G-I-A-N. And It is, or was, when we were in high school and grade school, that was the source of Saturday night wedding dances. And you would go there uninvited because it was simply what you did. And again, yeah, that's where I learned to dance, in this Belgian club out in Eloise in Superior, Wisconsin. And secondly, two very important homes in my background. My Polish grandparents lived in East End, which is mostly a Polish community. It was in the 1950s. They had a very simple home. They had a barn, a huge garden, a chicken coop, rabbits, typically very typical of Poles in Wisconsin. Three blocks away, my French grandparents had a magnificent Victorian home, parquet floors, formal entrance, tile fireplaces, gas lighting that had been converted, chandeliers that had been converted to electricity. What I would encourage, especially youth, if I were teaching a photography class, I would give as an assignment to go out and photograph your grandparents' homes, places that have significant value for you, because I am so sad that I never photographed the interiors of any of those homes for the grandparents, and yet as a very important period of my life. So again, photograph them.
Jerry,
that's terrific. Great suggestion. You know, documenting historic buildings is really important work. It's kind of the, you can't preserve a historic property unless you know it exists. So that documentation is like the backbone on which the entire profession of historic preservation is built. So, so I love that idea.
Yeah, I was thinking about that, and the insides of those homes, often the outsides are photographed. When I was a kid, I grew up on a farm, and I think the only inside photos I can remember are the ones taken at Christmas time, around the Christmas tree and holding up, me holding up my baseball mitt or something like that. And I have a fond memory of the inside of that house, but I wish, and I have a lot of photos of the outside, but I wish I, just from a personal standpoint, it'd be nice to have those, if nothing else.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when I worked at the Historical Society, one of the calls I would get quite frequently was from a person who was looking for photos of their house. And, they wanted to restore a porch that had been torn off, or they had, they have some kind of objective. And my advice to them was always go to the families that lived in the house before you and ask them, because that's where those photos exist. Just as you said, there are the people sitting around the Christmas tree, and you can see the rest of the inside of the house. Or, sometimes some people in Madison called me about photos of their porch, and I suggested to talk to the former residents, talk to the neighbors. Turned out the neighbors had a photo that was taken of a first communion. And in the background, it was the neighbor's yard, but in the background, you see that porch.
Uh-huh.
So, sometimes it's just about trying to be a good detective, and look at and kind of think outside of the box. Who would have created a photo of the building? What would have been created for? That's really helpful in trying to look at that kind of those kind of historic images.
Yeah, for sure. Jimmy in Monticello, it's your turn. Hi.
Thank you very much. I have an affinity towards old barns that pepper the landscape of Wisconsin, and I happen to be part of a sixth-generation working dairy farm yet to this day. We had an older barn that had outlived its usefulness, so I took it down board for board and repurposed it just a mile away or so from where I live. And in a process of taking the barn down, it exposed some boards that we had never seen in its all its years of existence, because there was no lights upstairs. Found a board that the old Schweitzers would always do it. They would sign this inconspicuous board the day they finished it. And I found the board, and it said, "Horse barn raised November 9, 1903. the cool part about it is this was all wood from our farm. My great-grandfather and grandfather built it. And when I went and looked at the calendar, the day that I started repurposing the site to put this barn, to repurpose this barn, and I started November 9, 2013, 110 years to the day that they finished it, I started to repurpose this project. And it just sent chills up and down my spine to have something so close to our family have that kind of aura to it. And it's just been a real fun project to restore. And I made it into kind of a garage and music studio, and it's just been a real delight. And I wish people had a better chance to preserve all these old barns. It just takes a new roof on a lot of them, and they will last for decades, but it's so much money to try and preserve them, and I get it, but it's a shame to watch them just crumble right before our eyes.
Yeah. So
did you sand a board when you reconstructed it?
I saved the board. The really cool thing is that there was more boards that we found. I have about 20 of them, and I numbered them, and I actually had the Historic Society take a couple of them. And we are currently preserving them.
Did you sign a board yourself when you put it back up?
I have not yet. I certainly could do that easy enough.
I added that history.
Yeah. Well, I made a time capsule and I hid it within the barn. It just happened to be a couple days after Trump was first elected. And so I'll save my opinions about what I put in there, but. It was a nice little letter that I hid for whoever decides to take the barn down, and we have a little snapshot of what was going on in my life at that time.
Oh, that's great, Jimmy. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, I do think I agree with you, Jim. I think Jimmy ought to also sign a board and date it. Maybe use a wood burning kit or something. So it stays. Thank you again. Yeah. Steve in Emerald, Wisconsin, your turn.
Hi.
Hi there. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I just called to say that I'm 53, and it seems history always seems to repeat itself. And as a kid, speaking of Polish grandparents, mine lived over in Pulaski by Green Bay, and they had an old house with wooden shutters, and I never saw them use the shutters, but in the last 15 years, I've had 3 hailstorms. A couple had hail as big as baseballs, looked like a cauliflower on the inside, and I decided, and I built my own and put shutters back on my house because of climate change.
Wow. Wonderful.
Oh, that's a great story, Steve. Thanks very much for calling. Oh, man. Well, Russ on Prairie Lake, north of Tomahawk, emailed a place he likes, the Windmill Ice Cream Shop on Lake Nokomis in Oneida County. 81 years old, started as a gas station, provides ice cream treats and family memories for generations of people from all over the world every summer.
Sure. I included that book, that building, Larry, in my book, Filler Up, the Glory Days of Wisconsin Gas Stations, and it really is pretty special. That particular kind of architecture, the architecture geeks, they refer to that as programmatic architecture. It's architecture that's meant to, like, grab your attention when you're driving down the highway. The novelty of the design is meant to kind of pull you off the road and to that place. And I think that's one of the finest examples of that in the state. It's really a wonderful building.
Well, it's called the Windmill Ice Cream Shop, and probably for good reason.
Yes, for good reason. You can tell what you can find there.
Oh, man. Chris in Milwaukee, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Oh, hey, good morning, Larry. Good to hear your voice. Memories of the good old days.
Yeah.
I have a question, two areas. I grew up in the rural area of the Dells, but in the Dells, they are tearing down wonderful old homes and building quick trip gas stations. They don't seem to have much appreciation of these wonderful buildings. But my years ago, when in the 50s, I was working at the Art Museum and at the State Fair in Schomer-Lichner, when I said, God, I've got to find a better place to live. I don't want to know what people are doing day and night through the thin walls. And he said, oh, there was a little French teacher who was run over by a drunk. She lived in this apartment. She had an apartment in the Matthew Keenan house, this huge house a few doors north of the Pfister Hotel on Jefferson Street and George Watts. And he said, I know it's for rent because the little lady went in the street and was run over by a drunk. So I know it's for rent. So I called the landlord, and he said, no, it cost a year's rent to fix the place up. And I said, give me a low rental and some paint, and I'll do it. So he did.
Whoa.
I think it was $28 a month. And I'm telling this long-winded story because it really has to do with the history of that house. I plugged in my hi-fi and went up in smoke. It was DC current.
Oh.
And I said, well, why didn't you tell me? Well, girlie, why didn't you ask? Well, you know, my friend had a converter, and so it was a double staircase. I was in the top floor in the ballroom, and the man who bought the building had to make an apartment for this little old lady that was killed in the street if he wanted to buy another building. And so it was the only apartment in the building, and it was up three flights of trudging stairs, but it was horrible. I mean, I lost friends, family, boyfriends. But I'll tell you, when I moved in, everyone thought I was crazy. When I moved out 11 years later, everyone wanted to buy it because I had converted it into what it was originally. One was modern, but one was antique, and one was the old-fashioned. And I left the floors the way they were, and the ceilings and the windows, well, they were 6 inches, 7 inches deep, at least, window seats. And I could look out on Jefferson Street and the Old Art Institute across the street. And I just roll out of bed in the morning on Saturdays and cross the street and teach.
Well, Chris, thanks for that story. Comment on that, Jim?
That sounds like a dream to me, Larry. You know, roll out of a bed and across the street to work. I think we all want to live that life. I'm familiar with that house. And, you know, that house is really a jewel. It absolutely is. And, you know, part of the motivation for preserving these old buildings is that there's a level of quality of construction and design which is just cost prohibitive today. You know, that building was built at a time that they were where you could get the finest quality lumber anywhere in the country out of Wisconsin. These houses were built really to last for hundreds of years. And, you know, as a preservationist, it really bothers me that people take down historic buildings without really thinking about, could they be adaptively reused? Could we do something else with that building? Can we give it a new life and, you know, continue it on for a few generations rather than just send it off to a construction landfill somewhere?
Yeah. Well, Dane in Port Wing, it's your turn, I believe. Hi, Dane.
Hi. I grew up in Woodstock, Illinois, which is south of Janesville on 14, but they preserved an old opera house made out of white brick. And earlier in your show, Jim, I think his name is, mentioned cream brick. Is that what he was talking about, and how was it manufactured? And was it a special clay?
Yeah.
A great question. That brick is really something that's very unique to Wisconsin. And why it gets that cream color is that the clay doesn't have iron in it. The iron is what makes bricks red. So the absence of iron in that clay deposit meant that the clay that came out of southeastern Wisconsin was so light in color, and it became very desirable even outside of Wisconsin. They shipped cream brick to other places because it was such a unique product. It became kind of a status product to build cream colored cream brick colored buildings.
And it's why, you know, Milwaukee has that Cream City designation, you know, and
that's right.
There, yep. It's called the Cream City for that reason. So those bricks may have come from Milwaukee, Dane. Almost for sure, I would think.
Anywhere along the edge of the shore of the lake from Racine, north of Milwaukee, you find that cream brick clay, even almost all the way to Madison to the west.
Your books, Jim, are fun, and I think, you know, we've been talking about photographing things and having photographic collections of things, and in your books, that's one of the nice things about those books are the photos that you have in there.
Yeah, thank you, Larry. Architecture is a visual art, and the way that you convey that meaning to other people is a lot of it's through photography and not necessarily through the words. So that is critically important. And in my books, I always tried to find a nice balance of having historic images of places so you can see what that place was when it was at its peak, but also contemporary photos so you can see that building still alive and useful today.
Yeah, and kind of going back to Jane from earlier from Eau Claire, you know, having those photos and thinking about elderly again, it's a great, I think that's a great way to help people who have problems with the change remember what it was like in their day.
Absolutely, Harry. I think that it does help people. It's a way that people can look back into the past through a photograph. And that's a powerful thing. The State Historic Preservation Office has been documenting historic buildings around Wisconsin for about 40 years, about 45 years now, and has amassed a collection of about 260,000 buildings that are all locatable by street address. So you can go to the Historical Society's website, look for the historic building database, and type in your street that you live on and see what photos document that street.
Wow.
Or your downtown or any of these buildings. You can go online and look at pictures of the Mabel Tainter Hall in Menominee.
That is, and where is it again, or where do we find that again, Jim?
You go to wisconsinhistory.org, which is the Historical Society's website, and right on the first page, you'll see a link that says explore historic buildings. And if you click on that, you'll find that.
Well, Jim, it's been fun talking with you today. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Larry. I think you're the Renaissance man of Wisconsin from my perspective, and I just love to listen to your show because in all of the time that you've been on the air, you have amassed an amazing wealth of arcane knowledge on all sorts of different topics.
I always tell people I'm pretty good at a cocktail party because I know a little bit about a whole bunch of things.
Exactly.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. Jim Drager, our guest, worked in the field of historic preservation for the Wisconsin Historical Society for over 20, 30 years, I believe, most recently as the state historic preservation officer. And I should mention those books again. He's co-author of one book is called Bottoms Up, A Toast to Wisconsin's Historic Bars and Breweries. The other is titled Filler Up, The Glory Days of Wisconsin Gas Stations. Fun reads for sure, and great to have him with us today. We're going to continue to talk about communities on the show, and we're going to talk about some of the struggles that our main streets are facing in, frankly, both large and small communities. And we're also going to celebrate some of those spots and the moments of good in this strange time. That coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network.